Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you, and got a great show for you today. But you know, I guess the first thing to look at is what's your take on the earnings season? So far, we've seen some explosions, and of course, we've seen some implosions. But the bottom line is we still don't have any reason to believe that anything is getting better. You know, the earnings that are not making because they're growing. They're making because they're making acquisitions, because they're, gee, what a shock, taking advantage of the cheap money. I find it interesting that we continue to get excited about the ability for companies to, you know, buy back their stock, buy other companies. In the meantime, we saw Greece reopen at a dramatic haircut. They must have gone to Supercuts for a quick $9.95 job. China. It looks like it might be pulling a 1929 job as they continue to try to manipulate stock prices. I mean, how does that make you feel when your government is manipulating stock prices? You can't feel too good, because it almost reminds me of Jordan Belfort from The Wolf of Wall Street, but from the penny stocks. They're floating the market until they can get out. I mean, does that not ring a bell? Does that not concern you? But of course, these aren't penny stocks. These are, you know, were real stocks. Is it not something that we should be thinking about? If the government or the central banks have to manipulate to maintain prices, what does that mean that they actually think of the prices? Now, I know our great leaders will get on and tell you how great everything is. I know they'll tell you about the growth we're experiencing, and I'd like to know where. I'd like one person to show me. Where's Jerry Maguire when you have? Show me the money. I'd like one person to show me where it really is going. You know, we've got Friday, we've got the jobs number coming up. And, you know, when you look at what the potential of this number is, the question is, does it really matter? Because we know that the numbers are manipulated. You know, we've had this dramatic claims number drop every week for, I don't know, 2 years or whatever it is. And yet, we still have the lowest participation rate we've had in almost 50 years. So what does that tell you? You know, as the old story goes, I never say it right, but my saying is, numbers never lie, only the people that report them do. And does the government not manipulate the numbers to make them look somewhat presentable? I mean, you know, again, when you look around to see what's going on, and when you look at the big picture, where's Clara Peller when I need her? Where's the beef? Okay, Wendy's. I mean, where is the growth? I mean, we haven't seen it anywhere other than the artificial growth that we continue to try to build momentum off of. But if you have to continue to put Band-Aids on a wound that really needs a tourniquet, eventually, the rigged Band-Aid or the rigged plumbing is going to burst. You know, it goes back to, you know, a dam. I mean, if you keep putting your fingers in the holes in a dam, what happens? Eventually, it breaks out. I mean, this almost reminds me of a Bugs Bunny cartoon. And of course, our people that are involved are almost like cartoon characters. They are almost like puppets that only know how to read what economic theory should be, not what it really is. I would love for one of them to have come from a real job and have to run a real budget without having a printing press available to them. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense as to what you see and what's going on, because there's just too many holes in their theory. Now, I don't know that I have the better answer, but I do know one thing for sure, that what they are doing is ridiculous. Okay. And I've said this is not new. This is long before we got this deep in. And now I believe we're so deep that the walls of Jericho are going to come tumbling down, and Humpty Dumpty is going to fall off the wall, because they've gone way too far. And the sadness of this all is there were so many things that could have been done going into this that we could have been in unbelievable shape right now. And that is the sad thing. And I'm not looking back. This is not hindsight. The Badger and I talked about this years ago when we used to do a 2 to 3 minute a YouTube hit every day. In fact, I'm going to try to find some of those and play them from you from 2009, from 2010. And here we are halfway through 2015. And I think from my view, other than the very wealthy and other than the stock market, we are in worse shape than we were then. I think the American worker is in much worse shape than they were. I think that the only people that are happy now are the people that are on entitlement programs or the very wealthy. I found it interesting, and to further my point, last week or 2 weeks ago in Seattle, when they did raise the minimum wage to $15, now the workers are saying, well, don't give us so many hours, because we still want to get the entitlements that we were getting before when we weren't making enough money. Now where does that make sense? Can anybody out there tell me where that makes sense? Now, I'm not an Obama basher. He just did a lousy job. Okay? He's a lousy president. In my opinion, he brought nothing to this country. Okay? He brought nothing but more grief and more garbage. Now, I'm not saying anybody's any better. I'm just saying that he did not do a very good job, in my opinion. Unfortunately, in this country, we can and have the right to say what we believe about people just like that. And, you know, again, I don't begrudge anybody for liking him, but I just think that if you look at the overall picture, you know, he caught a lucky break, because the stock market was going to bounce anyways. I mean, he had nothing to do with the bounce, but it's bouncing, so he can rest his laurels on that. But jobs have not improved. In fact, in my opinion, jobs have gotten worse, because people are making a hell of a lot less money than they were making when he got in. But that's all for another story. That's why the Badger and I always tell you how important it is to hedge and make sure you protect your portfolio. And then all this is just talk. We don't have to worry about it. Whatever happens, happens, and we get the benefit no matter what happens. And also, I just want to remind you that tonight, for my farming friends, we're doing a webinar to help you hedge and protect your assets and your companies, which is your farms, to make it better for you. So if you want to get involved, email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org. I'll send you out a link tonight at 7 Central Time. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop by here for a break, and we'll be right back after the break with Jane King. There's no one but you. Welcome back to the Bubba Show, and it is time for one of my all-time favorites, my friend, the world traveler, more importantly, the world broadcaster. No matter where you go, you're going to see my friend Jane King, Lila Max Media, as well as the author of the famous Ka-Ching Report. What's up, Jane?
Good morning to you, Todd. Doing great. Just trying to make it through this massive heat wave we've had in New York this week.
Yeah, I know it's been a hot one, and you know it's really stifling. You know, especially if you're stuck in some of those subways that don't have air conditioning there, which is brutal. Some of them are great, but
oh my goodness, they actually estimated 122 degrees on the subway platform this week.
I mean,
so,
it's unbelievable. But there's no more heat down there than there is on the markets and on the Fed. I mean, I know we're just churning around, and really it's interesting, Jane. We've been in the tightest market consolidation period since the year 1900, so 115 years. We've never had a range that's this tight. But when we look around the globe, I mean, things don't appear to be great, but of course, equity markets are still the number one story and are still hot. What are you thinking?
Yeah, boy, interesting about that trading range. So we're going to break out. Which way will we go, I guess, and when will it happen? Well, I guess, I mean, stocks is still the place to be, although it's getting scary. It's been, of course, interesting for me to watch China. My kids' college money is in Chinese stocks, and, of course, I don't have to tell you how volatile they've been over the past couple of weeks. And I started, like, thinking about it this week. I was like, yeah, I do believe in China for the long run, and we do know now they're going to be hosting the 2022 Olympics, so that was just announced. But I'm wondering how long it's going to take before we really start seeing some growth. It could be a while before China starts growing robustly again.
Well, you know, I don't know. I hope they're still around in, for the Beijing Olympics. But, you know, no, I mean, obviously, everything always, as they say, comes out in the wash. I mean, you know, markets are going to recover even when they do have this sell-off that I've been calling for. I mean, again, this is not a new story. What is your thought? When you look around and we look at Amazon, I asked an analyst or an advisor, actually, I said, tell me something. What is the great love affair with Amazon? They don't make any money. I mean, I know they can, but they don't. They've got a ridiculous P.E. ratio, yet it's like the most forgiven stock on the street. They just keep buying it like they're giving it away. And I don't understand. Do you ever have a clue about what's going on there?
Yeah, well, I mean, the only way I can explain it is just everybody's buying for the future. I mean, people will not even, venture capital people will not even look at you if you're an old media company. And they see, you know, Amazon as new media, you know, taking over everything from Walmart and to streaming music and movies. And but none of these things are making money. I mean, you're right. It's just at some point, I mean, what's the whole point of running a business is to make money. So I admire their innovation and I admire that they're trying new things and they're staying active. They're not getting stale, which, you know, you do see a lot of old companies do. And they're, you know, finding themselves in a lot of trouble because of that. But, you know, Google kind of went the same way a little bit. I mean, Google made money, lots of money. But they were spending a lot of money on kind of, you know, somebody's just kind of wacky idea on stuff, Google Glass and things like that. That, by the way, is coming back out. It's more geared to the workplace. But Google, you know, they have Ruth Porat coming in. She's kind of adding some discipline to the finances, and that's really helped them. I don't see that so much with Amazon, though. So I can't give you a great explanation about that. I mean, they're certainly not Apple. I mean, Apple makes money, although they're kind of looking more like a one-product company. So Apple's another interesting story. How long can they ride the iPhone wave?
It is amazing. And, you know, you are so well-versed in markets and everything. And you're a big social media person. What did you think about Twitter? I mean, somebody said to me, and let me get your take, and I'd like to hear what you think about Twitter, but somebody said the real problem with Twitter is it's too hard to get your message out in 140 characters. So that's the real problem. What do you think?
Well, to me, I see Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn all kind of having different purposes. And I mean, fashion pictures, you know, you share your birthday photos, you know, you share your, you know, thoughts. I mean, I have a lot of friends on there, you know, talk about this new day they had or whatever. Twitter to me is kind of just more a little burst of quick information. Like, I think that's why journalists like Twitter so much is you can put links to your articles. You can get out, you know, GDP numbers really quickly. You know, those are the kind of things I think Twitter does, and it just has not found a mainstream audience. You know, I like Twitter. I don't know, you know, if they can turn things around somehow. I mean, it seems like Jack Dorsey, the temporary CEO, you know, is just kind of sitting there. I don't know if he really wants to be there. He doesn't seem like he really wants to be. He wants to run other companies that he's launched. So I'm not sure he's the answer, but somebody's got to come in there with some good ideas and try to show the relevance of Twitter. I just feel like people, you know, and it's hard. For me, it's hard, like, to constantly follow it. Like, if I'm doing work and I'm on the computer and I'm on conference calls and I'm doing this and that, and then I look down at Twitter, which I'll have open, and it'll say, like, 817 tweets and this. I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, it just feels overwhelming. So, you know, I'm glad I'm not running Twitter. It's like McDonald's. I don't know what I'd do with the company.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it is a challenge. And of course, you know, that's the problem. Because you've got information and it comes so fast that who could track it all? I mean, you know, it's not like you're not working all day long. Well, actually, you're working all night long, but it's not like you're working all the time. It's you know, you don't have time to sort through all of the noise that comes through because a lot of things go through. I mean, a lot of people use Twitter like that. You talked about Facebook. They post things on there that are not relevant to what you're trying to do. So now Facebook, they had earnings, you know, on Wednesday. What do you think of their earnings? What do you think of Facebook? Is it a growth story?
Well, I love Facebook. It's amazing, like, how I can keep in touch with my third grade science teacher and know that he just had his 50th wedding anniversary, and I've seen pictures of it. I mean, it's amazing. Like, I would have never probably talked to this person again unless I ran into him by accident when I was home. And I like that part of it. Facebook's got a warmth to it, an emotional connection to it that I don't feel like Twitter has. You know, and when you look at the number of people, the users of Facebook is astounding. 1.5 billion. I mean, there's like 916 million people look at Facebook every day, and they're on there for 45 minutes. So now, how do you monetize that into an advertising model? I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to pick up on keywords. They're trying to, you know, work with search engines, see what kind of, you know, lands in boots you looked up and advertise those to you. I don't find myself paying a lot of attention to the ads on Facebook. So I'd be really curious to see some kind of metric there and see if the ads are working. I mean, it's got the eyeballs, but are people actually buying products based on the ads that they see on Facebook? I mean, I'm so busy looking at everybody's photos that I really don't even look at the ads. So I think that's still to be determined, but I mean, in terms of just sheer user numbers, I mean, Facebook's amazing.
Oh yeah, I mean, they are obviously, I think they say it's, you know, one of the number one tech companies, yes, you know, from that type. But of course, Intel is a bigger tech company than Facebook from that standpoint, because most computers have an Intel chip, so you have to get into them through using Intel. But anyway, so we look around and we see the world in the shape we are, and we see what's going on, and we've got all these things going on. How does it play out for Jane King over the next, you know, few months? What are you going to see? What are you looking for? What are some of the key things that are going to be on your mind, and especially doing some of the reporting you do as well?
Yeah, well, of course, August is kind of a dead month on Wall Street. So, although, you know, it's been past couple of years, and we've seen some action late summer. So we'll see. Of course, my main focus is, you know, growing the business, and I'm growing and trying to, you know, figure out how to do that. I'm trying to figure out, just from a personal standpoint, you know, where advertising and media is headed, how it's all coming together. I mean, Bob Iger, CEO of Disney, this week talked about, you know, spinning out the ESPN, separate subscription-based. I mean, things are changing. It's just a matter of seeing where it's going. There's a lot of things being experimented with, and you have to see what kind of catches the public's eye. And then I guess, you know, then we enter September, and so we'll see what the data points are in August and whether we think the Fed might move on interest rates in September. So I think we're going to know a lot more about that maybe after the August jobs report, or the, I guess, it'd be the July jobs report.
Even September, because they've got two reports, but they're not raising. There's no chance. They have no chance to raise rates. I'll say it now. I'll save us all the trouble. They're so far behind the curve that, in my opinion, they've totally butchered this entire setup. But, you know,
right.
Hey.
Well, they certainly don't seem eager to do it. So we'll see. And then December's probably out. So that's going to be the big main thing, I think, take it to the end of the year. Interest rate hike or no?
I say no, which means that equity markets will probably stay in this range, because there's really no reason to get excited to buy them unless if you're chasing yield. And there's really no reason to sell them because you know the Fed's going to support it. So Jane King, You got about 30 seconds. Anything exciting in your TV station world?
Well, just, you know, trying to keep everything going. We're exploring some different methods of delivery, like streaming video versus satellite, and trying to figure out if streaming is where it needs to be as good as satellite. So we're looking at that and just continuing to try to grow. My business partner's doing an RV tour in the Midwest. So he's an LA guy. So he's, you know, tooling around Iowa and everything. So it's interesting for him.
Jane King, Lila Max Media, The Kitchen Report. Thank you so much. It's great to have you on. As always, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be back right after the break. Sweet on the tip of my
tongue. Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call. And I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare. Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my man, my friend, Mike McClone from ETF Securities. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Todd. Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's good to have you back from vacation. I know you checked in while you were on the road, and I know you had a good time, and I'm glad. I'm sorry I didn't get to see you when you were in Chicago, but, you know, not a lot has changed. You know, I figured you'd go out and change the world, maybe stop the campaign trail and see things happening, but we see that really nothing has changed. We've got plunging commodity prices. We've got troubles all about. What are you seeing here, Mike?
Well, it's good to be back. Unfortunately, it's good, bad to be back into such an environment like this. So it's good to be back and digging into the numbers and have my, you know, all my data and my Excel spreadsheets and stuff. So one thing you mentioned, commodity prices. You look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index. It's like one of the major benchmark ways to measure the commodity market. It's down for the month of July about 10%. And the significance of that is that's about almost the worst. It's the fifth worst month in the history of the Bloomberg Commodity Index since 1991, and three of the worst months, previous months, all occurred in 2008. So this is a pretty significant shift lower in commodity prices. And what that means, I think, globally, is there's certainly globally much more of a problem in terms of maybe deflationary forces. Certainly commodity prices are deflating than what you're seeing here in this country, where we have the Fed, or this dichotomy of our Fed more worried about tightening and inflation versus the rest of the world more worried about easing and deflation.
Well, I mean, certainly the middle class's savings are deflating, and that's been my common story. So last week, last Wednesday, we had our good friend Dr. Janet Yellen come out. Well, she didn't actually come out. They issued the statement, no press conference. What did you make of the Fed's announcement, and what's your thoughts going forward?
Well, it looks like the market's priced for them to start the tightening cycle at the September meeting. That concludes on September 17th. So it's not so much what we made of it. It's probably good to talk about what the market says. So I've been analyzing, and I used to trade in Fed funds futures. So if you look at the federal funds futures, they're priced for about an 80% probability that, almost 100% probability, but the Fed will increase its target rate from the current 0 to 25 basis points to 25 basis points at the conclusion of the September 17th meeting. So that's, I think, Janet Yellen did nothing to really dissuade that. And I think there's still one key statement that I'd like to point out from their announcement that I think needs to be mentioned, and that is what they said: it will be appropriate to raise the target rate when the committee has seen some, they added this word some, further improvement in the labor market, and is reasonably confident that inflation will move back to its 2% objective. Well, the labor market, according to their data, continues to improve, but as far as inflation, there's really still absolutely virtually no signs of inflation. So to me, this really comes down to one of the key things they've said earlier. Part of the reason they're really talking about raising rates is because they're worried about excessive risk taking. And so I conclude that the Fed's more likely to tighten if the equity market continues to rally, and much less likely to tighten if the equity market declines.
Okay. And I will say what I've said at every meeting, that the Fed call is the Fed funds rate has been wrong. They've been wrong the entire cycle. They are wrong again. And I will say there is a zero chance of an interest rate rise in the year 2015. I will stand by that. I've said it every single meeting so far, and I will continue to stand on that, because the one thing I know for sure is globally, the economy sucks. Everything is melting down. And all of these, to quote my good friend Mike McClone from ETF Securities, unintended consequences are starting to be intending, and the consequences are not good. This is not a pretty picture, no matter how they want to paint it. This is not a pretty picture. What do you think?
Well, I don't disagree with you. What I'm worried about is that they might actually go ahead and start this process and then have to take it back, meaning what the ECB did in 2011. They thought, oh, it's the world's wonderful, we could start tightening, and then they started like in April, I think, in 2011, and by the end of the year, they were easing again, and here we are in quantitative easing. So I'm worried about that risk. That I think you're right. I agree with you. The Fed should not be tightening, but I think they should be talking about tightening because, you know, this number one indicator of economic growth, the equity market, is continuing to blast off. But I think if they were not to tighten this year, it would be because the stock market corrects before they start that initial move. And, you know, we hope that doesn't happen. And sometimes a correction might be a good thing. It'll allow us to reallocate assets and to get in and maybe load back up in, you know, in more of a rational market. But who knows how it's going to work out. But right now, you know, it's in what you're saying, if they don't tighten, there's a good opportunity for traders in Fed fund futures. If they do tighten, who knows what might happen. And one analyst said, okay, I think I'll buy gold the day they tighten, because his thought was they're going to do it and they'll be wrong. And that might be the bigger situation from a market standpoint, is when the Fed makes a mistake. If they make a mistake.
Well, again, I won't put words in your mouth because it's not fair of me, but I will say my opinion, and I think the Fed has made nothing but mistakes this entire run. If you accept the initial bailout, which I never really did, but from that point forward, they've done nothing right that's really helped the overall economy. That, yes, they have built the stock market into a monster. They've made companies like Amazon and Netflix into ridiculously valued products. But overall, they have done nothing to help the overall economy, except if you call destruction of the middle class helping the economy, then they've done probably the best job. You give them an A+ for that. But anyways, not to continue on my disdain for the Fed, because I think they've done a rotten job. What are you seeing from your point of view? You're not only, you know, local, you know, the States, but you're a little bit international as well. You've got some exposure everywhere. What's the overall view that you're seeing basis the world economies? And is there anything out there that really concerns Mike McClone?
Yeah, the things I'm losing sleep over are a lot of these indicators Global vehicle sales have declined. The latest data were negative, which is pretty bad. Chinese vehicle sales, the latest data for June, was negative. It's the first time in I don't know how many years, which is really disconcerting. So the structural shift lower in economic growth in China, I think, is a big factor. And you're seeing the trickle-down factor, like VW and a lot of the major automakers saying, oh, we expect declining sales now in Caterpillar because of what's happening in China. So I think people underestimated the impact this might be having. And then I also look at the indicators from the markets. What are the markets telling me? And that is, you know, when you have the commodity market collapse 10% in 1 month, and you and I discussed this, we fully expected crude oil to break down from 60, and it's just simply continuing the path of least resistance, which remains down, is when you see these major breakdowns in commodities, yeah, and then you hear China saying, oh, our GDP is growing 7%, yet the massive amount of incremental demand for commodities world is coming from China, you have to say, suspect something's wrong. So what I'm concerned then is this equity market in China, what, you know, these draconian efforts they put in, instituted to help alleviate the decline, yet I think July was the worst month in China since 2009. That's a big signal of worry to me, and I have to relate that back to the U.S. in 2008. Remember when the SEC, it was September 19th, 2008, the SEC put out this Do Not Short list, and that instituted this massive shortcoming rally in the U.S. market. And I remember thinking, at the time I was bearish, and I think that was a great chance to sell, partly because it was a signal for the government that things were that bad. And to me, when the government has to institute those type of draconian efforts, you have to be worried that the government thinks things are that bad in China. And that's what I'm really worried about.
And you know, again, I'm not going to say they're not that bad. Listen, I'm not a doomsayer. You know, I'm a very positive guy. I believe in America, and obviously I still believe this is the greatest country on earth. But I think, in my personal opinion, we've really lost sight of what the real goals of the Federal Reserve is and what they really should be. You have any thought to that?
Yeah, this is a great, we can do a good point counterpoint on this, because I think we would benefit of hindsight. We both agreed that the Fed probably should have started tightening 2013 when the stock market blasted off to new heights, at least stopped QE, at least. But to me, what they did, we'll never know, but you know, we could have had a pretty significant depression. And you can see by globally what we did in this country has really paid off compared to a lot of other countries. Look what Europe is right now. I mean, they instituted all this austerity programs, and they didn't ease as quickly as we did. And look, they're just lagging behind the world, and now they're trying to catch up. Here, at least we're considering restraint as the economy picks up, and you know, at least unemployment's low, at least the data shows it's low, so at least we show signs of better improvement. And we could say some of that's because our Fed is a little more forward looking than say the ECB. But then you look at places like China and in Japan, at least Japan, and they're still doing QE, and they're still stuck in this rut, and you know, who knows if it's ever going to get much better, at least in our lifetimes.
Well, I mean, but Japan's, you know, celebrated their silver anniversary. In fact, I sent them a silver tray to commemorate that they've been in that piece of crap area for 25 years, and they've not done anything better, and they are still trying to throw money and assets. And of course, Abe says, buy everything, we don't care, we're buying, we're going to step in and buy everything. But we got my man Mike McClone here from ETF Securities. And again, check it out. It's ETFsecurities.com. They have, in my opinion, by far the best ETFs for metals in the industry. They are calculated the best. They have every advantage to you, the individual, to make your portfolio better. And we're going to come back to the break and talk about why everybody should own some portion of these types of things, and why it's important to understand more or less the endowment type model of investing and trading. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I am with Mike McClone from ETF Securities. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with my friend, my man, Mike McClone, ETF Securities. So, Mike, you know, we've seen, I don't know, I think the media makes it out to be more dramatic than it is, but we have seen, obviously, a significant fall in gold. But really, for the last 6 or 7 days, we really found this level somewhere around 1070 to 1080 overall. Now, what's your take of the gold market first. Where do you think it's going from here? And then I want to talk to you about investing in it. But what's your take from here?
Well, unfortunately, gold has been a bit painful, and I have to admit I'm part of that, being part of that pain, and it hasn't been done well. But it's clearly stuck in this dichotomy of the U.S. Fed raising rates, yet commodities collapsing, and the rest of the world reducing rates. And those words in one sentence is basically an oxymoron. It's basically never really happened. So gold is stuck in a bit of a worst-case scenario. It's showing some significant signs of getting way too cheap and overdone. The question is how far much lower is that going to happen? We talked about that happening in silver. You know, the open interest, one of the factors for gold is the futures open interest in gold for this year is up 18%. Now, I went back and checked data. I only had to go back to 1997. And open interest has never increased in a year that the price was down. So you know what that means from our standpoint is these are massive amounts of new shorts getting into the market. So at some point, gold should be a primary beneficiary, and unfortunately hasn't done well. But I think, like I mentioned earlier, if and or when the equity market corrects, which would take some of this Fed tightening, should take some of this Fed tightening out of the market, gold should be a primary beneficiary. But one thing I want to bring into the conversation is we do offer products in gold, silver, platinum, palladium, and unfortunately they've been performing quite poorly with all the commodities this year. For obvious reasons, they're showing deflationary environments, China's slowing down, the dollar's stronger. But a product we don't offer that I wish we did, we didn't, and that is the product on the U.S. bond market. So here I think this is a pure, you know, I'm not pushing any type of products to talk about, where I think it's showing this the pure value is what I see still some major attraction in the market is the U.S. bond market. So you look at the 10-year note yield, it's yielding 2.27%. Now that's down on the month at the high point. I think this month was yielding about 2.45%. The significance is it's basically double the yield of, you know, any other in the average bond yield in Europe. So the way I look at it is this still to me is one of the most attractive investments. It was one of the best investments last year. Like for instance, the TLT, which tracks the 20-year, was up 30% last year. If this whole dream of inflation picks up and the economy's blasting off and the Fed has to fight this inflation and that picks up, that's great. And if you lose a little money in bonds because of it, that's okay because the rest of the economy's doing well. But this whole concept of the Fed fighting inflation that's non-existent and the potential for us to kind of trickle down like some of the rest of the world should be beneficial to the bond market. So my thought is this is an area that hopefully, you know, I think is still very attractive. And if we're wrong in this area, the whole rest of the country should be doing fine, and that to me is still the dream.
You know, you mentioned gold and the problem and the short interest. You know, I read something the other day, but this is the first time in history that hedge funds are actually net short gold. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the amount of, we can just line up the ducks of signs of excessive, you know, shorts, you know, extreme signs in the gold market. The last time that happened was, you know, we had hedge funds excessive, you know, net long positions in gold was when gold peaked around 1900 in 2011-12. So it's the exact opposite now. So that's one thing I just have to be careful with. As you know, you and I know picking bottoms in markets is difficult, but gold is becoming very attractive. And if you dig into the markets, which we mentioned is open interest, the signs of it being excessively, you know, term oversold are the quite there. So I think most analysts expect maybe you can easily get a rally to 1,200. But, you know, we're all not looking for short-term positions, looking for the more longer term. The key thing also is it's dragging down silver. So my thought is if, you know, when we get a recovery, silver might be the better player. For instance, year-to-date, gold's down about 9%. Silver's down about 7%. Historically, silver's traded basically with a higher volatility, about a 1.4 to 1.5 ratio to gold. So silver should be down over, you know, like 12, 13%, yet it's not. So I think it's being dragged down by gold. So at some point, when gold stops going down, recover, silver should do better. But either or, both of them are showing excessively oversold conditions, massive shorts, and at some point, you know, at least they're setting up for a decent short cover rally, but picking that spot is, as you and I both know, in the pits can be kind of difficult.
Well, it's hard to be a picker, but, you know, then we talk about the I always like to talk about the endowment model of investing, and you're a big advocate of that, you know, through your terminology, and that means that you and I think both believe that everybody should have at least a partial exposure to gold, silver, platinum, whatever, you know, the metals, just as part of your overall portfolio, just like owning real estate or something. You know, again, nobody should be overweighted in everything. You should be kind of spread out so that when one isn't working as well as it should, the other should be working better. And isn't that, don't you believe in that as well?
Oh, completely. So let's look at this July so far. The S&P 500 is up about 2%. That's generally the primary asset for most people. For most of us, individuals, it's really your home. But it's up 2%. Now, you know, if you have a small portion, and also the bond market's up quite a bit. It's up a couple percent in a week. So if, you know, I've been talking about being overweight bonds, overweight precious metals, and maybe lightening up in equities a little bit, waiting for a decent correction to reweight. But, you know, overall, from a portfolio standpoint, it's been a very low volatility month, and you're doing fine. Yes, it's unfortunate gold's going down, but just imagine if the S&P 500 was down 10%. That diversified part of your portfolio, probably the bond market and you know, your precious metals, probably would be doing much better. Now, we don't know for sure, but the key point is, year to date, equity market's still up, you know, S&P's up 2.4%. They're doing great. The dollar's taken off. Everything's wonderful. So those diversifier assets in your portfolio, like gold and maybe some of the bonds, are might not doing as well. But, you know, at some point when reality comes back to the market, you would be a primary beneficiary. And you always want to be there ready to buy stocks when they give you a correction. And there's better ways to do that. We have some wonderful products that we think are a way to do that. And I think that's what's happened. A lot of people are kind of waiting in the wings for, you know, just some normalization so they can re-weight in the equity market. And that's what I hear from a lot of money managers. They're just kind of scared. They're waiting for better positioning.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, one of the things that, you know, people don't recognize, when you buy gold, okay, you're buying a hard asset, which you're not worried about the CEO throwing a party for his wife. You're not worried about them going out of business. I mean, the value may change, but you still own the gold, or you still own, you know, the gold ETF, which you get at ETF Securities. So it's not like that's going to change. And you can't, I think one of the problems we've had in today's investing community, Mike, is the advent of cell phones and everybody checking their portfolio almost minute to minute. When you're investing for 30 years, but you're looking at your portfolio minute to minute, I think that's caused a lot of grief and a lot of problems for a lot of people. What do you think?
Yeah, agreed. I have to admit, I look away, big picture, don't trade, invest, and that's what I always try to extol, invest. And if you're going to trade, you know, sometimes you and I can use options, and we've been there, done that, but longer term, it's best to make sure you're protected and diversified, and read a book.
Exactly. I mean, you know, look, you and I talk about this all the time, and listen, we're not trying to pick tops or bottoms. I mean, I will, you know, be more aggressive at it because that's what I do, and I will say what I think about certain markets, but at the end, when you're investing, I don't do that in my investing account. I don't even look at my statements, basically, because I don't care. I mean, I don't want to lose money, but I understand what I'm doing and I understand what I'm trying to accomplish. And I think that's where people kind of lose sight of what it is. And you're saying, and I believe this is what you're saying, is that you need to be diversified throughout your portfolio, have some exposure to everything. You may want to switch the weighting here and there, but at the end of the day, you really want to be pretty much diversified throughout.
Yeah, exactly. And when I look at, you know, just, you know, I look at diversified and protected and you know, certain areas are supposed to say thank you. And I think, you know, after we've had this massive run up in equities, it's supposed to be probably lightening up a little, booking profits and just waiting for that correction to reload. And I look at like the VIX. The VIX is a volatility index. It's running at 12%. And that's historically very low. It's very complacent and that's good. Hopefully it stays there for a while. But we all know at some point that's going to mean revert. It's going to go higher. And when it does, just make sure you're ready and protected so you can be a responsive investor and say, oh, okay, things have moved around. They gave me some volatility. I want to react accordingly rather than, you know, panicking. You never want to be able to panic. And by being diversified, you don't have to worry about that. You're much less worried about the panicking.
Mike McClone, ETF Securities, you always bring great light to the Bubba Show. It's always great to have you on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
This has been Mike McClone, ETF Securities. You got to check it out. They have the best configuration of ETFs for what we're talking about here on The Bubba Show. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Everybody have a great day. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you tomorrow.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.